the fuck is this? Game Informer magazine. Oh, look at this. Oh, we have to inform the people of the games. Oh, we're so special. Everybody has a fucking magazine. Oh, it's fucking these corporations, I swear to God, you know, they get a hold of everything. They make everything. They take anything that's like good and pure and they corrupt it. It's, oh, don't get me started. Anyway.
Hey Biff, what is the Easter Bunny's favorite kind of music?
Is this something that's going to be disparaging to Jesus? What's Easter Bunny's favorite music, Shock?
Hippity hop.
Okay, well that's not bad.
Yeah.
At least it's not sacrilegious.
It was horrible.
That's what I'm saying.
All right.
Horrible joke, but not sacrilegious.
Hey Biff. Why did the baby chick cross the road?
Why did the baby chick cross the road, Jack?
Want to see his peeps?
Okay, yeah, you know, once again, better than the one about, you know, that you have about the Jesus in the hotel, so.
Oh, man. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Carnival Personality, Jacques.
Hey, this is Biff. It's been a while.
Hey guys, it's Joe. How's it going? I feel really great today. Like, honestly, like I haven't felt this good in a long time. First, I'm glad to see that Biff is back. He was gone for a while. He was feeling under the weather. He's kind of still in recovery, but it's really good to see him. And it's always good to see my one of my closest, dearest friends, Jacques. I love him. I'm really happy. April Fools. I'm just kidding.
See.
I'm going to be a miserable cunt.
Is that it? Well, that's not April Fools.
No, this drops tomorrow and that would be it. Okay. I was like, oh, he's playing the long game. Well, yeah. About 18 hours.
How's it going, everybody? This is Joe.
It is great to have everybody back together. Today, as we recorded, it's Easter, and as Biff just alluded to, I'm just hoping when Jesus comes out of the cave, he doesn't see his shadow in six more weeks of winter. But anyways, it is nice to have you back, Biff. Lots to talk about this week. We'll get right into it. Last week's podcast guest, Tony V. Joe and I specifically will be dining out on that sideshow for a very long time to come.
Yeah. I mean, and Tony V will be dining out for at least one bag of chips, but we'll get to that in a moment.
I was just going to say, but seriously, when you think of all the comics out of Boston, he is in that rarefied air of just, you know, beloved beyond all belief. Like, truly, how in this region this guy is loved, and we talked about him a lot the last few weeks, you know, his show with Bobcat and stuff, but Joe and I will talk more about seeing him at the Boston Comedy Festival a couple days this week. But he was a great guest. Next week's guest, a man named Dave Radican, who is another, you know, regional headliner, another regional booker. I've done a bunch of shows, like book shows for him. I felt bad because Dave had given me a show for this past Saturday, a book show this past Saturday. But then when I ended up working, agreeing to work on the Boston Comedy Festival all week, Saturday was the day that Tony, it was the day of the finals, but it's also the day that Tony was getting his Lifetime Achievement Award from the festival. So I let Dave know, I feel bad. And he was cool with it. And then Joe's like, hey, Dave Radican and Tony are doing a show in my neighborhood in a few weeks.
Like literally like half a mile from my place.
Wow,
I think cool. So it was, and so we got tickets to that. That is happening April 13th. They got to change the calendar. April 13th, I think.
So, and I let Dave know. It's like, hey, so that's great. We are also Just to let you know, Biff, we might, and I'm not obligating you to this, we might start for a little while, start dropping Thursday podcast again. Might go back to like more sideshows on Thursday just because, and again, we'll get into it in just a second, the backlog that we have. So Joe and I talked to this woman, Alana Foden. She's another, you know, regional comic who also books, you know, a few many shows a year. She was just delightful. I did a show with her several months ago, and her comedy just really strikes a chord with me. You know, it's all family based and stuff like that. So we talked to her, but at the festival, I worked the festival all week. We'll get more into that in a second. Joe was instrumental in helping with a few things with the festival. He
And
was
by instrumental, he means the guy who plays the triangle. Like, that's the instrument I played in getting things together.
you know,
not so you went from the maracas to the triangle.
I was
That's
demoted, yes.
oh my, is that a demotion?
No,
I think so.
I don't think, and I gotta say, and I mean this with all sincerity, I think Joe, you might be the second greatest triangulist
Yeah.
I have ever known.
Well, you
Second
know, for
second only to? Who's number one? Who's number one? Number one triangle player. If you don't fucking get this right, I'm just gonna see if there's an exit button where I can just drop you. Can I drop you from this soon? Come on.
You can mute my mic. I mean, I think you can mute me.
I think he's a very great musician. I think he's very fine indeed. Yes, great musician.
See, now if you want to say cowbell, I know where
Yeah,
I was
right.
going.
The triangle, come on, man. I don't know. I'm sorry. You know what? I give up my Gen Z, my Gen X card. I don't know what reference you. I don't
Ed
know. Oh, at
Grimley.
Grimley? Oh
Yes.
yeah. Oh yeah. Okay. Well, I'm sorry. Ed Grimley's been out of my mind for. I'm not sure it's always been in my heart, but Ed Grimley. It's been a while. I'm sorry. It's been a while since I've seen him on the big screen or the small screen or any screen.
But yeah, no, Joe, and Joe was there. Were you there 2 days or 3 days? The 6 days I was there.
Two.
Okay. But you were there 7 days in my heart.
In spirit.
Well, one day I reached out to you. I'm like, all right, what button did you hit yesterday? Because he can't find it. And it became a thing. But yeah, no. And because of a lot of the people I met at the festival, a surprising number of them who were like, oh, I love to do the podcast. Like a dozen, there's a regional headliner. Her name is Emily Rusowski, and she has really climbed the ladder like the last couple years.
Is she related to Ed Mrozowski or?
I don't believe so, but
Oh, okay. Because that'd be really cool.
she headlined a show that I did like 7, 8 months ago, and really her comedy was great. It's not gender specific, but it really hit a chord with management and a few of her friends there in a very specific way that we'll get into when she comes on the podcast. But I saw her at the festival because she headlined, one of the she closed one of the semifinal nights, and when she saw me, she says, "Oh my God, I feel so bad. I haven't gotten back to you about the podcast. I really want to do it." And I said, "Hey, it's fine. I'm just going to let you know Tony V was on this week's podcast, and this week he gets a Lifetime Achievement Award.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a coincidence." And so she was great. But Joe, why don't you talk a little bit about your experience this week at the festival? Because you had it was only 2 days, but they were two pretty very long days, but pretty fun, right?
So wait,
Absolutely. You want to kind of, and Joe can do with this, but you want to kind of set up like what it was, what was going on, just kind of talk about the festival itself.
Sure. So the Boston Comedy Festival, it did its 24th year. Basically, it's like a competition for young comedians and old comedians who are, getting a late start or whatever, or who just haven't broken into the mainstream yet. And they compete against each other in sort of a bracketing system, I think. So it's a week-long event. This year it was held at the City Winery in Boston. A nice place, has two rooms. There's a big room and a smaller room. And They just sort of have like the preliminary rounds, and then they have the semifinals, and then the finals. And the finals were last night, essentially, and at the Berkeley Performance Center. And a part of that also was not only were there younger comics doing a competition of sorts, they also had like some featured performers, like DL Hughley was on this year, Kevin Nealon. Tony V was also there. He was there like he was sort of like the almost like the house band at one point, because like there was a night where the first night that I was there to help out was Tuesday night. In the big room, they had a celebration of life for the comedian Tony V, where they had basically like all the attendees in the audience were like his neighbors and family. So that was unique, but not necessarily exclusively for those types. But at the same time, they also had other comics come on, like Lenny Clark was there, sort of giving his eulogy. I mean,
eulogy.
his compliments to Tony, and they also had video in testimonials from Bill Burr, Steve Sweeney, Bobcat Goldthwait, and a cameo by Tony V's son, and Wally and Lauren and Wally from like the local WROR radio station. They're like Boston radio legends. They did a video slash in person appearance. Anyway, but yeah, it was just sort of like a week long event. Happens in March because that's, as Jim McHugh puts it, like, you don't want it in June because it's too nice out and people don't want to, like, oh, let's see, am I going to barbecue with my friends or go see a bunch of, lesser known comedians perform? I think I'll they'll do that. You want people coming in out of the rain, someplace where they can drink and, be miserable with happier people, or at least people who present to be happy. And so I was there Tuesday night to help with Jacques. And also, by help, I mean getting Jim McHugh set up for, he did this podcast or like a live stream about for about a half an hour before, like about 2 hours before each night, just to sort of say, hey, this is night one, this is what we're doing, this is who's available, who's coming in, there are tickets available if you still want to come in and see. And so, but those two olds couldn't figure out how to get on the internet, so they bring in
Oh
the
my
young
God. Of
46 year
course.
old to help them get back on track. So I that's how I,
There you go.
contributed.
Well, it's
More than a triangle.
much more,
That
much
was
more.
more of like a rhombus, I guess.
But he, no, it's funny because also at that tribute on Tuesday, yeah, so Tony MC the first night of the festival, like
Okay.
both shows. It was, and he was Greg Grady. He starts off, it's like, he does a little soliloquy on why Monday nights are the best nights to see live comedy. And then he talks about he's getting a lifetime achievement, been doing this for 40 years, and he's hosting round one on a Monday night.
Nice.
He's like, so if you win this competition, maybe in 40 years you can. And he looks around, be here.
All right. And by the way, he also made a joke about during Tuesday night's celebration of life, which is, from the outside, if you don't know that Tony V is still alive, you would assume that maybe this is sort of a memorial. But he mentioned when he gave his speech at the end of the night, he goes, yeah, Jim McHugh, this is another one of his harebrained cockamamie schemes to get people to come. So he's like, hey, Tony, you want to do, we're giving you the Lifetime Achievement Award. I go, great. He goes, so can you call some of your celebrity friends and have them do video testimonials? I'm like, yeah, I guess. So yeah, I'm basically roped into doing my own tribute.
And then one of the highlights again is like every time, I feel a little awkward and really, really happy every time Steve Bjork walks into a room because I didn't know he was on the lineup. Like, Jim says, yeah, I invite like six or seven people. We'll see who shows up. Like, Lenny might show up. This one might show up. And then Steve, hung out with Joe and I, and he's always just on. And that was a lot of fun. But the funny thing is, it's like, yeah, when I started helping Jim with his live stream a couple months ago, the first time, and it's always how somebody meets you and the light in which you're introduced to them. And so this is a couple months ago, I think I was hosting for the first time one of Jim's shows in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, and we were talking about it afterwards with another comedian who has a very successful podcast, and Joe. And just Joe sounded like he knew what he's talking about. So a week later, when I went up there to help him out, he's like, "Oh, do you think you can bring your friend?" You know, who's, and I ended up hiring a guy who works for the company Steam Deck that makes the software. And
Steam, you got two different things. So StreamYard is the website that, you know, where you live stream, because Steam Deck is a video game system put out by Valve.
And
Stream Deck is a little device, like a little iPad device that podcasters and broadcasters use. It's sort of like a soundboard slash control panel. So a lot of streaming and steaming.
So the tough thing with Jim is just convincing him, because he's late 50s and his fan base is all Facebook, but everybody else in comedy, not just, you know, the people under 40, but most of the comics, but especially the ones under 40, are all on Instagram. And so I kept telling him, it's like, dude, just stand outside in the hallway and listen to all the comics coming out of the festival who were just on stage, like getting each other's Instagram. So you have to be on that. And the stream service does let you go to like seven places at once, but he was going out to three of his Facebook pages, like the comedy's Facebook page, his Facebook page, and like City Winery's Facebook page, or something like that. And finally, because Instagram does, you know, without getting to the weeds, make you go an extra pain in the butt step. And he forgot it on Monday. Joe came in on Tuesday. He went out on Tuesday. And then Jim was surprised at like how much text or messaging was coming in on chat. Instagram. Yeah, on the chat. The chat was like blowing up, as the kids would say, on the Insta. Somebody needs to punch me in the face right now.
I'll hire a Gen Z person to do that.
And the funny thing is I can sit there and I can navigate through it for Jim, but he has it in his head. Oh, Jock produces this and is a comedian, but Joe is the ticket to really making this. So every time I'm like, hey, look, yeah, I can take a look at that. He's like, well, I think I'm doing this and this. But Joe comes in. Joe's like, hey, can I sit there for a second? Jim can't move fast enough to let Joe. So Joe did, got him up on Instagram. And then the next 2 days, wasn't there. Anyways, it was great that Joe was there. It was great on Tuesday. The rest of the week was fine. But last night was the big night. It was the finals. And because I do most of the talking most of the time, Joe, I'm just going to let you
surprising.
Thank God Jacques did most of the talking.
I'm going to let Joe run breakdown last night. You know, I'll let you, because I think it was a pretty fun night for us.
Yeah, well, first you picked me up around 3:30, and then we took, we took Fresh Pond into, you don't want the actual directions on
No, I want to know what drinks you had in the car too.
Well, we obviously had the Coke Zero. That's the de facto. They should be sponsoring us by now, really. I mean, come on, guys, get on the ball. Where's our free case of Coke Zero bottles? Oh, you know, Jacques would have to move the other cases of Coke Zero bottles out of the way to make room for the new case. Anywho, so no, we get there early. We're like kind of the first ones there. I think we beat Jim McHugh and his sister Helen, who runs the show, helps him run the show, there. But Jacques had already been there the day before, so they were familiar with him. They assumed I was not some stalker that was just following Jacques from his car. So because I followed in right after, I have no credentials. I'm wearing a gray hoodie. I had the hood down, so I didn't look that suspicious. But then all the comics started to file in the green room. It was a nice, you know, getting to chat with some of these newer, like all these comics that I'm really not familiar with. But it was fun because, you know, you were talking to them on like a regular human level. And then I get later to see their act and I'm like, that's not the guy I talked to. Why does he look like a homeless person that's all hunched over? Oh, wait, he's doing a bit. I got it. Yeah, this is his character. It's an act like a comic. But then, yeah, so we're getting things set up. Jacques and I are tasked with lighting the comics so that each comic was supposed to go on for exactly 5 minutes or just under 5 minutes. Like they couldn't go over 5 minutes because we really had a tight schedule. So we had to keep time. We got moved around a couple of times because there was some seating questions. But finally we settled down. Jacques was manning the flashlight. I was manning the timer. That's how we, you know, coordinated things on our end. But before the show starts, there are a couple of special guests coming in. There was Adam Ferrara, who was also receiving an award.
Okay.
And Michael Gross from Family Ties. Stephen
Keaton.
I did
see the photos with you guys.
That photo was a result of Jacques, you know, seeing from across the way earlier on when Michael was there. He was kind of trying to find his way and talking to some people he kind of recognized, but he was looking for Jim McHugh, and Jacques was like, oh, I can show you to Jim here right this way. And so of course I'm shadowing Jacques. We're leading him down the hallway. The nicest, nicest person you could ever encounter. He's just happy to be there. He's, you know, what a wonderful event, you know, whatever. He goes to talk to Jim, and then we lead him back to where his VIP seat is going to be. And in the hallway, that's where Jacques says, you know, Mr. Gross, would you mind taking a picture? He was couldn't be nicer. Apologized for after shaking my hand for having a cold hand because he was just holding a beer. And unfortunately, I think he was covering for the fact that my hands were ice cold because I have a heart condition and I was nervous. So there's that. But at least they weren't clammy. And so we sat down. He sat down. The show went off without a hitch. Everybody came in under five. There were 10 comics. Everybody was funny. Everybody came in on time. The only stumble was Jim McHugh got Michael Gross's name, character name wrong. He called him Alex. He played Alex Keaton.
Oh, right. And Alex is Michael J. Fox, right?
Yes. But he didn't have his glasses because he had the little paper down in front. He couldn't, you know, whatever. Michael Gross gave a nice speech about how he was surprised to get a Comedy Lifetime Achievement or a Comedy Award because he's known for playing funny characters, but not really so much writing comedy. You know, and he blamed his Irish Catholic background for not being able to write good comedy. He said, like, people of color, they're funny.
Yeah.
Jewish people traditionally funnier. You know, here's why, you know, the Irish Catholic.
I kind of assumed that he would be writing because, you know, his sister was on SNL, right? So I kind of thought that, you know, he would.
Do you remember the Yeats quote that he had about happiness in Irish people?
No.
It's like... it's something like, you know, the misery and depression sustains him through his bouts of happiness.
So it was, and then Tony V went up and accepted his award, did his bit. Adam Ferrara obviously went up and accepted his award, did like another like 10 minutes or so. The only thing I remember Adam Ferrara from Adam Ferrara's routines, because I remember seeing him on Comedy Central in the 90s, he would do these little interstitials. And for some reason, him doing an impersonation of Tony Danza going, Angela, Samantha, like that stuck with me. I didn't get to meet Adam, so I didn't get to bother him. But anyways.
But we did his manager. We helped his manager get seated as well.
Sure. Yeah. So we were like the VIP ushers / timers.
VIP ushers.
Hey, whatever I could do to justify my existence there, because man, I felt like Bob Dylan at We Are the World. Like I was just like, I do not belong here. Like I am surrounded by, actually, no, that escalates me to a higher plane of legitimacy.
But
than
you
I
had
deserve.
A pass. You had your all access pass. You had your all access photo pass.
Thanks to one Jacques. But anywho, you know what? They didn't kick me out. I was unassuming. White privilege wins again. Yay.
But so as the comics started trickling in, you know, a couple of them recognized me from being at the festival this week. You know, this one, you know, it's a really nice room. So before anybody's there, it's really empty. And she wanted to take a picture by the mic. So we took a couple of pictures of her by the mic and she was like, thankful. Then we're just talking to the comics. This one comic who I had done a mic with like 6 months ago who had this one bit that really stood out to me that's the one and only time he had done it. I just have. And so I'm like, oh, cause when he first walked in on Monday, I'm like, do you have this bit? And he goes, oh my God, yeah. He goes, I did it once. I'm like, I loved it. So then Joe and I are talking to this other comic. Nice kid, you know, but really much like Joe, you know, a man out of time, where this kid like loves Jack Benny and loves like old, you know, things. And we were talking to him about like these old shows that he watches and this and that. And then Joe looks him up. He goes, he's a year older than my son. Like, but
you're younger than my son.
You're younger than your son. And it's funny because my oldest son, he definitely could have, passed for like 30, 31, 32, and that, I think.
I don't know. I think that was because of the material that he was, you know, we were talking about. We were talking about, like, you know, Peter Marshall hosting Hollywood Squares.
Peter Marshall.
Who turned 98 the other day.
He's still alive?
Yes.
My God.
Yes, they replayed his Gilbert Gottfried thing from 8 years ago, where he was only a spry 90 years old.
Oh,
but anyway,
it,
the comic you're talking about, his name is Joe Katz. So if I had an affair with a Jewish woman at the same time I I married my wife, yes, he could probably be my illegitimate son.
But nice kid. But then we talked to a couple of comics. It was great. And during the week, you know, I didn't get to be. I could have been in the Kevin Nealon room, but I did the lighting at this other night when there's a local guy. His name is Matt Shearer. He works for like the news radio station here. He does the fun man on the street, you know, quirky interviews. There's a really good follow on Instagram, Biff, called like Old Dirty Boston. And that kid has found this really great niche. He's all over New England talking to restaurant owners and this and that, like quirky places. But it's a really great follow, Old Dirty Boston. And he's like, oh, dude, I love to do the podcast. The fact that the guy who created the Boston Film Festival, the Comedy Festival, the two people, John Tobin and Jim McHugh, and when John Tobin got into politics, he got out of, you know, this, you know, as a full-time thing. He always stayed in comedy somehow, but now he's the kingfish in the town, and then Jim's been doing this for 24 years. The fact that those people, and then people like Steve Bjork and Mike Atrobis, and of course, you know, Tony doing our podcast, completely legitimizes us in all the eyes.
I'm nervous now because now it's our obligation to actually get listeners, because there's all this great content that, I mean, you know, if a comedian goes on a podcast and nobody listens, does he actually make a sound?
So there was a podcast in town, Biff. There's two guys, one who lives north of Toronto, like 2 hours north, and his partner in crime lives in New Jersey. And they were at the festival for 2 days because they have a small comedy record label that basically curates new material for Sirius Radio.
Yeah.
The guy who lives in north of Toronto, he goes, yeah, I do a festival. It's about 2 hours north of Toronto. And when, you know, and I'm like, what, do you live in Perry Sound? The look on his face of, you know what Perry Sound is? You know, but they have it started as a hockey fight podcast called Fight Stories. And they get NHL guys on, but now it has segue to just all kinds of other fight stories. It's one of those big podcasts where part of them being in town was doing a live recording at the Berkeley on Saturday. They had just got back from doing a live recording in St. Louis, where they had three ex-Blues on. They had a episode recently where they had the real Ogie Oglethorpe on.
Right. Yeah.
Those guys were like, you know, just really cool. They're like, oh my God, we love to do a podcast, like anytime. Because of the legitimacy. But when I tell people from Canada, you know, one of these gals that we spent some good time with, because she was there early, the one we took a picture of, this kid from Montreal. But those guys, when I said, oh yeah, I don't say we had, you know, Steve Bjork on this episode, to them, I said, oh, we just had the National Hockey Players Association right. Legal Counsel. Yeah. They're like, what? I'm like, yeah, really great friend. She was on the first U.S. national women's team. And again, that legitimizes us to these people.
Right.
And Joe was right. It's like, yeah, the fact that Marie would come on this, and the fact that all those people have, but it's great. So Joe, tell them about some guests coming up.
Well, before we wrap up what we did, up the Boston Comedy Festival JAG, the piece de resistance was the other award that Tony Villa received prior to receiving his Lifetime Achievement Award. He does a bit where he talks about when he was a kid, he thought having grape soda and a bag of chips was the pinnacle of existence. It couldn't get any better than to just drink a glass of grape soda and have a bag of chips. And then when he got a little older, he discovered sex. And he goes, well, maybe I'll put the grape soda back on in the shelf for a while. And then as he got even older and into married life, he goes, you know what? I could go for a grape soda and a bag of chips right about now. So what did Jack bring for Tony V backstage? A 2-liter bottle of, who knew they still made it, grape soda and a bag of Ruffles, a large bag. And those things go for like $300 now. Like, they're really expensive. I don't know if you've been shopping lately.
Do they still have the grape knee highs? Because that would be awesome.
Well, and the funny thing is, because he's a big cigar smoker, that's his thing. And he's not a drinker, but he's a big cigar smoker. So at the, at his makeshift eulogy, so many people were presenting him with cigars and stuff like that. And I'm like, I'm going to go a different. So I saw him on Monday and after Tuesday, I got it. And he was going to be there on Friday. I'm like, I'm going to hold off until Joe's here because we gave it to him. He's like, this is heavy because that was in a shopping bag. And then he's like, I didn't know they made that. And then I was so touched that he sets it up and he's taking a picture of the grape soda and the chips. It really struck a chord with him. Then he'd take a picture with us and I posted it, then I'm going to repost. But it was one of those things where it's like, I think it was great. And Joe's like, yeah, he kind of knows me because of sight. It's like, I told him, it's like, when we see him in a couple of weeks, he will tell people, it's like, oh, these guys brought me grape soda. I mean, he's such a sweetheart. He remembers that. He really remembers stuff.
I did ask him as he was leaving. I said, Tony, do you mind if I help you carry that bag of grape soda and chips to the trash for you? Because I know. he laughed and he was like, no. But then when we saw him, as we kind of lagged behind him, and he happened to be hanging out in front of the entrance, I didn't see a bag next to him.
He already put it in the car. He had the Columbo spot out front.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I thought he found a dumpster because he also likes to smoke cigars by dumpsters, which is like a running thing with him. And I'm like, oh yeah, that came in handy. I just happened to be next to this dumpster with this bag of things that I don't want.
So, kind of a side question.
Yeah, sure. Please.
So grape knee high, is that a thing in New England?
I don't know what knee high is.
I was obsessed with this concept of grape knee high because I don't know if you remember, but Rita O'Reilly and MASH referred to the grape knee high all the time.
That's where I'm like, why do I know that? Like, what pop culture reference? Right. Mr. So, Three Finger Radar.
Right. And I didn't know that it was a real thing until, this wasn't, as I watched MASH in Canada, I moved to Hawaii and they had this drink and I didn't know that it was knee high because it's spelled NEHI, and it's, Nehi sounds very Hawaiian. I'm thinking, and I didn't know that that's what, I read this guy, oh my God, this is what the great knee high is.
Wow. So is it like an Asian or like?
I don't think so. Okay. I think that maybe it was regional or something like that. Maybe, I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Is it small?
Like,
it's just another brand. It's just like Fanta or whatever. It just, it came out of the, I always bought it out of this specific vending machine, at a park. So.
Oh, nice.
It's funny because the other highlight, and Joe wasn't there, but I posted it. Friday, they were doing the last semifinal night at, City Winery, which is only 3 miles away or a half hour, depending on how traffic goes.
What, are you in LA or something?
Dude, this one intersection at Berkeley is like, it's like the Tigris and Euphrates of traffic.
No, when they talk about traffic, like Boston, I think LA is like number two in the world for bad traffic. Boston's number four. I went over to Jim because there was a show at Berkeley and it didn't sell out like last night was sold out. Like it was like Joe said, we had our seats moved three times where we had to sit in a spurt. Anyways, and it was packed. But on Friday, it was a pretty good crowd, but it had a couple pass winners. Tony was going to be there, but he got a last minute pay gig. But I went over there with Jim. you know, to kind of help coordinate with that. And about 2 minutes before the show started, Jim, as if I was doing him a favor, said, "Hey, do you want to go bring me on stage?" You know, which was a really cool thing to be able to get up in front of like that many people. It was like, you know, a little 30-second introduction, kept it short and sweet, in and out. But it was just really great to, you know, walk onto that stage and kind of be part of that, even in a really small way. So between the live, doing the live streams, which I had so much fun, you know, doing that with Jim, it was extra fun when Joe was there. That was the highlight, bringing Jim on, but meeting Michael Gross and just hanging out with Tony. But now, the other thing that we kind of got lost in the shuffle on Saturday, as we're walking to the festival, we were a salmon swimming upstream through a sea of anime convention goers.
Yeah, they had Anime Con nearby.
Cosplayers, lots of cosplayers and stuff.
Yeah. So, right, we were, you know, I think if Jacques wore his regular attire, he would fit right in.
right.
But, you know, he wanted it to be all fancy for the finale. So, yes, he looked like a regular person.
In a Hello Kitty shirt and a blue sweatshirt.
Actually, you know what? Yeah, if you veered off into the anime flow, nobody would have batted an eye.
So I walk in both worlds, Joe. But now tell him about maybe some of the guests who have – one in particular was like, "I would love to come on. You tell me anytime." Talk about some of the guests coming on.
Oh, do we want to give that stuff away right
sure,
now?
Sure, yeah.
Because they haven't been committed to, you know, coming on.
But
I don't
go
know.
Ahead. I would.
Are you talking about Casey Crawford?
And the other winner.
Of course. And what is her name? Right off the top of your head.
Angelica. And am I going to say it right? Skanook? Is that how we think we're pronouncing it?
Hold on a second. You're making me work here.
She was from Toronto, and it, you know, it was great. She was the girl who earlier in the day asked if we could take the picture of her, you know, the dramatic picture of her at the mic, because it's a huge room and it looked very like it was a great photo. It came out great.
Angelica Skanura.
Skanura, and she's from Toronto, and she's fantastic. And Casey Crawford, who, like I said, I've done a couple, you know, gigs with before. He's from, I don't know, North Dakota, South Dakota, and I don't
South
think it
Dakota.
Matters.
Yeah. His bio said South Dakota. I was looking it up on the Boston Comedy Festival website last night.
He's a really, really great guy. But yeah, when he comes on stage, he's hunched over. He talks out of the side of his mouth. You know, he goes into a character, which it really strikes.
He's got the Mike Nesmith cap on. He's a funny guy. A lot of like one-liner, like killer stuff. I think I don't like repeating people's like stuff too much, but the one line he said was it him that did the main vegetable in my diet is a Whopper lettuce.
Whopper lettuce.
Yeah, that was really, really great. I mean,
give him credit. He could have had it his way, and you know, didn't say no lettuce, right?
Exactly. So, right.
Give him credit.
He bowed down to the woke culture, man. No,
give him credit.
Yeah.
Just seeing your note there. And as Joe and I are walking backstage, and it's funny because when Joe and I were first walking from the theater. Once the show started, you couldn't go through the stage. It was a step, so you had to go around. And we were quoting, of course, Spinal Tap, because you have to go down this long hallway, through these double doors, through this other door, backstage.
Hello, Cleveland! Down.
And then as we were coming back up with Adam Ferreira's manager, he starts quoting like that scene from Spinal Tap, which was really, you know, it was really fun. But as Joe and I are walking...
They're reuniting.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I know. That's Spinal Tap 2 is in the works. No rush.
No rush, guys.
No rush, yeah.
Harry Shearer's only 80. But as we're walking.
Is he really?
Yes.
Yeah.
Really? Like 70,
you know who else is 80? You know who else is 80? Ernie Hudson, who plays Winston from the Ghostbusters.
Holy shit. Have you seen the picture of him?
He's 78 years old and he looks like fantastic. I can't stop he's seated next to Bill Murray, who looks like Bill Murray should be looking at this age. And then you have Ernie Hudson, who like literally like stepped through a portal from 1990.
Jeez. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, he does. He looks better now than 1980. Like, they had a side by. He's more like, he's thicker. You know what
fit.
I mean?
He's fit.
Fitter.
Yeah, he, wow.
But yes. As Joe and I are walking back to the green room, you know, Tony gets off stage, and as they're bringing out the 10 contestants, like, that's when we make a beeline downstairs. And we were talking in the hallway. It's like, who do you think won? And we were both like, well, if we were voting, it would come down between Angelica and Casey.
Casey. Yeah.
And as we're getting to the steps to go down to the green room, we're behind the curtain. They're like, we have it's only the second time in Boston comedy history we have a tie.
Wow.
And the two
Casey Crawford and Angelica Scanura. So we were like, wow. Yeah. I mean, it was, everybody was great. These two obviously had a little bit of an edge because of their presentation, and they just had enough of a zhuzh to push it over the edge.
Was it Angelica step dancing, that Irish step dancing that put her over? Do you think
that, or it could have been her Britney Spears Instagram imitation? So right, was that her? That was her, right?
Yeah, that and people were like amazed at, like, because she starts doing like a Britney, the Britney twirling dance, and people were like, "Holy shit, she's like," and
then
turns out she's a dancer. She's really, that is her background. Both of them just could not be happier for, you know, but even that kid, Joseph, like, he has texted and says, oh my God, I would love to come on the podcast. I mean, that might be the one Peter Marshall podcast.
Finally, we can have a Jack Benny sideshow. Like, right. Finally.
With a 23-year-old, you know.
Listen, we're giving the kids what they want to hear, you know, like, finally, he's proof positive.
You know, in light of the new Netflix special about the goings on in Nickelodeon, I'm glad that that interview will be done over Zoom.
Yes, yeah, that's a dark watch. I watched that. It's called Quiet on Set.
Quiet, yeah. I just read the fallout from it, and it's like, holy cow! It's like, yeah, ugh.
And I know these shows because my kids kind of watch these shows growing up, and yeah, it's you know, not good.
I heard there's a guy I see on Instagram a lot, you know, kind of heavyset guy, the camera's close to him, and he always has these like photos that go in the background where he's like, here's some weird connections you might not know, that like this person is a nephew of this person, that this person, and it's really interesting stuff. So I'm like, yeah, I'm going to listen to his podcast on the drive home last night. And Cody something, I'll repost it, but he did a deep dive into the special, and he was like, the guy who's at the center of it said, well, these are being taken out of context. He goes, well, there's a couple things that I do agree. I guess there's one character where there was this, you know, black kid played, and it looked like he was, oh, his superhero
nose boy.
And he was like, you know, it's like people thought like the black noses sewn on his shoulders were kind of phallic looking. And he's like, I don't really see it. I do see some stereotypical, like, racist, like, affectations of, you know, black noses on a young black kid.
Right. In any case, it's bad news. You know, it's either whether you see them as penises or you see them as like stereotypical black noses. It's kind of like
overtly racist. And he goes, and the poor costume person who had to drive in that day, did they know they were driving into the set to sew, you know, black noses on the shoulders of a little black kid's outfit?
The man at the center of the producer in question is Dan Schneider, who you might remember from Head of the Class. He played Dennis. He was like the Norman Lear of kids TV for like the 2000s and 2010s on Nickelodeon. And then finally in 2018, after like the Me Too movement and all that stuff, they decided to part ways with Dan Schneider. Amid like allegations that he had created a hostile work environments and didn't do enough to protect kids from bad people, you know, the drug pusher away, keeper awayers, you know, like those people, like getting rid of, you know, ne'er-do-wells.
And that's one of those ones where the culpability is on everybody's shoulders. He was horrible. He was absolutely horrible. But then again, this whole child labor system that is in place, and the parents, you know, who, know to some degree, or more degree, the shenanigans. And I will never forget, going all the way back, the first Borat movie, there was a scene in it, and I at this time in my life, management was working for Larry Charles's family, and I was hanging out with Larry Charles quite a bit. And he was aghast, because they did a casting call as part of the movie. And it's part of the movie Borat, where they were casting a role for a child. And the whole bit, and this was real, the people didn't know that they signed up, they signed the release that they were auditioned, was going to be taped and all this stuff. But one by one, as the parents come in, and if you find this scene on YouTube, it will turn your stomach, because what the character, you know, they were doing is, if they agree to something, he would double down, like, okay, are you okay with your 5-year-old sitting in the front seat as we do this stunt? Oh yeah, yeah, no, that's fine. It's like, well, the car is going to be going 80-ish miles an hour. Oh yeah, no, that'd be fine. It's like, well, you know, because where we're going to have to put the camera, they're not going to be able to wear a seatbelt. Oh no, that should be fine. And then they kept us like, we're going to do that stunt where the car goes up onto, and parent by parent, it wasn't just one parent. And I remember talking to Larry Charles, which we'll do a sideshow about that piece of shit someday. But they kept really doubling down. And so when the next people came in, they didn't start at the base. They started a little higher up, you know what I mean? Nobody left. Nobody said, no, I'm not cool with that, my child being put. And all these stage moms, and I'm not being sexist, but it was moms who brought kids there. The stuff that they were saying, oh yeah, no, that's fine, just to get their kid, you know. And what ended up being cast was a 6-month-old, like, you know, little, you know,
infant,
you know, in this role, or maybe it was a year. And even then, it's like, you know, he's picking the kid up at the baggage carousel. So here comes this little, you know, toddler.
Oh, was that OJ? Little baby OJ?
Little baby OJ. But when you go back, if you just watch that scene, so when you flash forward to this Nickelodeon thing, it's like, yeah. And that's why it's like, even the one movie I did with Bill, we casted a 7-year-old kid for this one scene where mommy is dragging him. And the shot is, you're dragging this kid maybe 30 yards down the sidewalk in this neighborhood in Jackson, Mississippi, where we're filming. And the kid is yelling, "You're not my mommy, you're not my mommy." It's an Invasion of the Body Snatcher type thing. Right. And when my mom saw the movie, she's like, "Why didn't you have Grayson do that?" And I told my mom, it's like, I wasn't going to fly him down there, like have him be with me for like 2 days. Like, you know, management was still in Qatar at the time. Yeah. But either way, I told my mom, it's like, you know, his call time was something like 10, 11 o'clock in the morning on a school day. We don't end up shooting that scene till about 8, 9 at night. So that kid's not getting home, you know, until like midnight. So I don't know if he missed the 2 school days. And then, you know, in the editing process, his voice was kind of too annoying. So they VO'd it. So it wasn't, you know, so here this kid sat on a set for 10 plus hours on a very hot day during a school day in Jackson, Mississippi, and he was on screen maybe 3-4 seconds.
See, this is where AI can come into play. You know, that's the way, you're not hiring child actors. You're just having CG generated kids, you know, pretend to be children. And by the way, just to wrap this up, in defense of one particular parent, there is a parent who does, a couple of parents who do testimonials on this special Quiet on Set, where they voice, they basically flat out said, we voiced our disapproval of certain things, but then they were immediately kind of shot down by the system and dismissed as sort of being disruptive, or like there was like the parent's place to sit. And then there was the rest of the set where everybody worked. Yeah. And so the parents were kind of like, and for the most part, the parents were supposed to be kept away from the kids during work. But I don't know, there was this machine in place to make it so that troublesome, quote unquote, parents wouldn't interfere with the production of these shows.
So it's just horrible. Hey, I'm gonna, Joe, is, do you have one of those old Gamer Informer magazines like lying around?
Kind of, yeah, way over there.
In the meantime, let's start talking about London Bridge falling down, Baltimore version.
Oh my God. I mean, I and I only know about, you know, about the crash, right? But, and I don't know the details, and obviously, sadly, a few people die, but yeah, it's like, I guess part of it is that, how does that happen, right? How does that even happen?
Did you see the footage?
I did, yeah. This is big enough so that it actually was one of the, you know, headlining news even in Japan, because obviously, you know, this thing does affect the whole, you know, transportation, blah, 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 right? So, and obviously, Japan is still, even though they're not the manufacturing power that they used to be, that, you know, it is, you know, it does affect their economy to a point where, like, this, you know, this was even a huge deal in my homeland. And obviously, it probably is in many countries, right? So,
yeah, no, those ships, I don't know, like, people who've, hold on, here he comes.
Yeah.
Okay, so flip through that for a second, Joe, but really, you know, and I want you to find like a good review or something, but as far as, yeah, so let's start at the top. So we all hear about the crash, and management insists that I look at the footage. I'm like,
right.
And she's describing it. I'm like, fine, yeah. I'll look at it. She goes, yeah, no, you have to see it. You have to see it. Yeah. I'm like, okay. I said, I'm sure I see it on the news. No, I want you to see it now. So she pairs it. We were watching something. She pairs it to the Apple TV. And I watched the footage and I look at her and I said, you did not do a good job describing. And she tried. She spent 5 minutes trying to tell me about how it collapsed and how fast and this and that. I'm like, and I said, you did not do an adequate job describing this bridge collapse, nor could you have. This is something you physically had to see that bridge go down. And I'm not kidding. From the time the boat hit that pillar to the last piece of rebar being at the bottom of that seconds, like absolute seconds.
Yeah.
And it was a portion of the bridge, like the entire bridge spans 1.6 miles.
Right.
I think the portion that fell was the wrought iron, or not the wrought iron, but the steel portion right in the center. And so that was like probably, I don't know, like a half mile section or something like that. I mean, but it was a substantial, it's the center of the bridge.
Yeah.
The barge in question, the cargo ship, lost power twice prior to collision. I didn't know this until President Biden talked about it, that the National Guard they immediately, when they saw that there was distress on the ship, they sent Mayday signals to the National Guard or the Coast Guard, and they immediately closed the bridge in both directions. What they didn't do was evacuate the bridge of the road workers on the bridge filling potholes at the time. Now, a lot of them were migrant workers from other countries.
They couldn't. And because from what I hear, and credit where credit's due, it was about a 60-second window from them getting the distress call to that being closed down. But as you said, there was no way to get out there and physically let people know to get off the bridge.
Unless they had cellular phones?
Oh, yeah, right.
Or radio or something like that?
Right.
Who knows? Who knows what, like how they were supposed to communicate or how they kept in communication with the workers.
Joe, have you ever seen one of those like transport ships up close?
Closer, yeah. I mean, I actually worked in buildings. Like, I did work at the Schraffs building years ago, which is right by the harbor. And there were like these big LNG, you know, cargo ships and stuff. And they were, you know, they're substantial.
The people who haven't seen, I mean, you see it on the TV, but if you ever see one of those things up close, it's like, how does this float? Like how doesn't this just, I mean, and so I don't know the tonnage that went into that, but here's the second to worst part. The first worst part is the loss of the lives. The second worst part is immediately not the dark web, not the extreme conspiracy theories of like, you know, whatever.
QAnon.
Fox News instantly starts the conspiracy things, and I don't know if it's the most disgusting one, that it was Biden's open borders that caused this crash. The other one was this was done deliberately so that another blue state could get more money from the Biden infrastructure bill. And it's just another way to grift off the poor, hardworking red state. That wasn't from the fringes of the internet. And then there's all these other conspiracy theories. I went back and forth with our good friend, like Dave LaPointe from Complaints and Observation. My theory, and I will battle anybody with this, is if you look close enough on the footage that you can clearly see Bigfoot riding Nessie. And as it loses power, pushing it towards the pillar.
That is such a dumb thing to say, because we all know that Nessie is a freshwater creature.
Yes.
And this is, you are such an idiot.
Already exposed.
I mean, come on. What are you even doing?
And can Bigfoot even swim? I mean, really? Can Bigfoot even swim?
No, that's why he was like riding.
Listen, I will concede that I'm not sure that Bigfoot can not swim, but still, come on. Nessie, please.
So Joe, did you find an interesting article and the old thing?
I guess so.
Okay, Joe fucked up yesterday. As we were driving in.
All the people of, you know, like accusing somebody of fucking up.
Oh, no. Stay with me on this one. Joe fucked up because as we were driving in, I don't know exactly what set it off, but for several minutes, he went into a Bill Burr tangent where I didn't know you could do such a good Bill Burr tangent. You are now going to be doing that impression sometime soon on the podcast. So he fucked up and let me know that he had another
impersonation.
Voice. And it is, you know, very large, very impressive repertoire.
And they all sound like me, by the way.
You know what? I'm not going to do it anymore, Joe. So without further introduction, and this week's unprompted, unprepared, spring it on Joe. Yeah, I do suck. Self-induction theater. I give you Joe reading. Let us know what you're reading, what year, what issue, as our beloved cities, our favorite son, I think, Bill Burr.
Burr doing a video game review. All right, you cunts. Here we go. We're looking at, the fuck is this? Game Informer magazine. Oh, look at this. Oh, we have to inform the people of the games. Oh, we're so special. Everybody has a fucking magazine. Oh, it's fucking these corporations. I swear to God, you know, they get a hold of everything. They make everything. They take anything that's like good and pure and they corrupt it. Don't get me started. Anyway. All right. Let's see here. Oh, look. Here we go. You know, I used to make fun of these people and then I was cast on their show and it turns out they're nice people. Star Wars Rogue Squadron. You know, I don't know anything about this fucking thing. I don't know. I don't know. There were four words. I just said four words. I don't know what any of them mean. Star Wars Rogue Squadron. What is that? Who gives a fuck? Anyways, plowing ahead. This is for the Nintendo 64 because the other 363 Nintendos weren't good enough. Now I remember the Nintendo 64. That was kind of the shit. I'm not gonna lie. I kind of like Mario. I for the 2 seconds I played it. They had a couple of good wrestling games on there. Anyway, moving forward, Nintendo 64's Star Wars Rogue Squadron, huh? They give it an 8.75 out of what, 100? Like, what are we looking at here? It's and you believe. What's this? This is the tag. And you believe this game is the balance of the force? I mean, get over yourself. What the fuck is this? Oh, they give... There's three reviewers. No, it's not just one. They got to split the duties. Here, you do the pocket protector. You do the calculator. I'll do Dungeons & Dragons. Get all the, you know, the specialist nerds reviewing this one fucking game. They give it an 8.75, I guess, out of 10. I don't know. It looks all right. I'd fucking play it. I mean, who am I? Oh, Bill. Oh, fucking. You're always shitting on everybody else's parade. You know, it's a old Billy Raindrops. That's what they call me. They're just raining on people's parade. You know, what the fuck? Yeah, I don't know. What do they call that? Yucking other people's yum. You're yucking other people's yum. Can't you just be nice for once and don't be a fucking ginger cunt your whole life? Anyway, yeah, I don't know. It's a good game, I guess. You know, it's better than those fucking weird porn games you got on your phone. Oh, jeez. Oh, Bill. Yeah, that's right. There are porn games on the phone. But this takes me back to an old day. Oh, when I first got it started out in comedy at Nick's. I remember they used to fucking have these things. Now that I think about it, yeah, they used to have these things, these fucking video games. They had the PlayStation, the first fucking PlayStation, and the Nintendo. Yeah, it was a good time. Eh, you know what? It's all right. You know what? Maybe I am yucking other people's yums. It's all right. It's good. You know. Yeah. So you know what? I was informed by Game Informer. You know what? You turn this old ginger, ne'er-do-well fucking wannabe drummer, helicopter flying. I don't know why I'm bringing up. Oh, Bill, why are you talking about all your accomplishments that you didn't really accomplish? Oh, you know what? You should get a Lifetime Achievement Award at the Boston Comedy Festival next year. Yeah, maybe I will. Maybe I will. Maybe if I, you know, invite enough celebrity friends, I'll get an award. Anyway, old Billy Tangent. We'll stop talking. That's it.
There you go. There you go.
And I forget what he said in the car, but he's like, you know, kind of how, you know, Bill Barr pretends to, you know, say, oh, I'll make political, blah, blah, blah. And
old Billy Fence Sitter.
Billy Fence Sitter was the one that Joe threw out that just absolutely, absolutely killed me. And thank
sorry
you.
Sorry for all the C words. I mean, you know, replace them with, edit me with, by saying the word candy.
No, I think in the light of the latest trend, I think your ginger comments are what's gonna, you know, are gonna be a little more, you know, look, we're trying to get more listeners as more important and awesome guests are coming on, and now that's just gonna, I don't know if Scotty Black's gonna listen anymore.
Hopefully Tony V isn't listening. No. I'm really offensive to his friend.
So because Joe and I don't follow any sport really, Biff, any big things going on that we should know about?
Playoff rush, baby. I mean, you know, it's, you know, it is what it is. I mean, you know, it's, you know, the usual suspects are in, but, couple of, teams are going to be probably out of the playoffs that are going to be disappointments and people are going to be fired. So New Jersey Devils and, New York Islanders probably expected to be in the playoffs. Probably not going to be in the playoffs. Other than that, yeah. Austin Matthews 60 goal season, kind of a big deal. And then, oh, hey, that baseball thing, that Shohei Ohtani thing. Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah. I know very little about that. Reader's Digest that for me, please.
Well, I mean, essentially, Dodgers opened the season against the Padres in Seoul, South Korea. And during that time, it came out that there was a few rumblings that actually started where ESPN was apparently ready to release a story that basically said that the Ohtani's interpreter, you know, got money from, you know, Ohtani to pay off some gambling debts. But then that kind of got, you know, and that apparently that story's been in development for a while. And then that kind of got shoved aside where there was an announcement that said this, you know, interpreter stole Ohtani, you know, kind of got a hand, you know, hand on Ohtani's bank account and sent, you know, like $4.5 million to this bookie. Right.
Wow.
And so that's the story that's out there. And obviously like everybody's saying, yeah, so that sounds real likely that some dude who is the interpreter somehow is able to wire, you know, millions of dollars to some bookie without it being kind of detected and whatever, right? So,
I mean, I think don't most interpreters handle financials of their celebrity clients?
So, I mean, to be fair, so Lisa Guerrero did point this out. Lisa Guerrero, who's she has been a reporter. She has been like a kind of these TV host kind of a thing. But Most notably, she was married to a major league player. And she said that, just so you know, it's not that surprising that an athlete just has no idea how their finances work. So she did defend that aspect of it. But still, like, the fact, you know, it's like, why is this guy going through a bookie even? Right. Like, you know, he could have just, he's, you know, is it because he's a, you know, major league employee that he shouldn't be gambling anyway? Who knows? But obviously the investigation is there to make sure that it wasn't Ohtani that was gambling. And I can't believe that it's, I mean, you know, I mean, I'm a Japanese national. I defend the Japanese, but I just cannot. The story just doesn't add up, right? I mean, I can't believe that this was not Ohtani's, you know, bet. Yeah.
My favorite takeaway is I saw a couple times came up on my feed, Pete Rose. Somebody throws their camera in front of Pete Rose, and he says, like, I wish I had an interpreter in the 70s and the 80s. Yeah. I'd be in the Hall of Fame now.
Yeah, you know what? You know what? Whatever, you know. I mean, the thing is, you know, Pete Rose could just shut the fuck up. Because bottom line is that, you know, the investigation's not over, right? And if the investigation, you know, does somehow conclude that he did gamble and they still keep him in, then he should start complaining. But you know what? This is the thing that cracks me up. All these MAGA people are all defending Pete Rose now and says, yeah, so you're the people that was okay with, you know, immigrants being separating from, you know, parents and kids being separated because, well, they knew that they were breaking the law. So, they have to deal with the consequences. Pete Rose freaking knew the rules. And he's dealing with the consequences. Suddenly, like, the fact that Pete Rose can't get into some stupid Hall of Fame club is like some kind of a travesty, but separating kids from their parents is, well, they should have known they were breaking the law. Yeah. Give me a freaking break.
Well, to be fair, he wasn't breaking any laws. You know, the MLB rules aren't exactly the law, but, you know, sure. So he broke the MLB rules. And the MLB, you know, they change their mind. They flip-flop all the time. I mean, they're in bed with fucking DraftKings. Like, you can bet on whether the next pitch is going to be a home run.
Right. It is sort of really funny that, they've gone all full in on that, right?
But then you can't – I mean, I don't know. This will – yes, you even though they're sponsored by all of these – now I think they're in bed with all of these betting organizations and gambling organizations, and it's now legal in most states.
Well,
it's kind of like saying, like, well, you know, why are they making a big deal if MLB players are betting? Because they're in bed with us. It's like, well, they also have alcohol sponsors. That doesn't mean that it should only be okay for the MLB players to be drunk, you know, or like, you know, or drinking and driving.
But the funny thing is that, you know, MLB players often used to be drunk. Like, because, you know.
I guess, you know what, that's true. And to be fair, like betting on baseball isn't against the law. It's just against the integrity and the rules that MLB self-imposes selectively.
Well, the funny thing about the MAGAs being upset about Pete Rose not being in, it's more a apples to apples thing is – yeah, they're all saying the Stormy Daniels thing it's a witch hunt, it's bullshit. Nobody was screaming that when Michael Cohen went to jail for essentially the same thing. Like, he was the bag man paying her off the way this interpreter allegedly is paying off, you know, his debts. So
are you just saying that there are fall guys and scandals? Like,
yes.
There are people are just going to be, you know. By the way, the Fall Guy trailer looks fun. The new Fall Guy movie coming out with Ryan Gosling.
Which, by the way, why do you think I keep you hanging around, Joe? Like, sooner or later. It's funny because, and Biff, you will know this. First of all, the Fall Guy, I saw the trailer, and first of all, I see Ryan Gosling, so yum. Second of all, like, I text Joe from the theater. I'm like, hey, do you know if this is, you know, based on the TV show? And it is, so we will be watching a Fall Guy pretty soon.
That's the Lee Majors one, right? Was that the Lee Majors?
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, I was reminded, I had so totally forgotten about this, that was the power couple of the 70s, right? Lee Majors and Farrah Fawcett.
Yeah.
Right?
She was Farrah Fawcett Majors.
Fawcett Majors. And I had completely forgotten about it until I saw some stuff where they were on the cover of People magazine promoting jogging.
That's awesome. Know where else Lee Majors makes a cameo appearance in one of our favorite movies? Scrooged.
Right.
It's Lee Majors.
A hill of beans, what happens to me, Santa?
Oh, and Lee, you've been a very good boy this year.
Oh, that is awesome. You know, Yeah, I think we can, you know, pretty much start wrapping up.
Yeah, what else have we, what have we been watching?
What have you been watching there, Biff?
The inside of my eyelids. I'm sorry. I've just been sick and sleeping a lot, so I got nothing.
You, Joe?
Well, we have both seen Ghostbusters Frozen Empire.
I liked it.
Liked it too.
I did. I know there were some people I went to the theater with who didn't like it as much as I did. I'm like, yeah, you know what? Can you lay off with that's not what the hyperspace looks like?
Oh, Billy rain on the parade there. Yeah. I know. Yeah. It was a busy movie. I mean, don't get me wrong. Even though I enjoyed the movie, I thought it was probably, I don't know, the second or third best Ghostbusters movie out there. It had a lot going on, you know. It was like, it wasn't as messy as those goddamn DC movies, like Justice League or whatever the fuck. But you know.
So it's like you're saying, it's literally up there with one and two.
Yes. Yeah, wow. I think
that's pretty good.
I think like just like the pacing in the movie.
Yeah.
You know what? It was a lot. It's a lot. It plays a lot, and like a lot of people of my generation say this, is that it plays a lot like an episode of the Ghostbusters cartoon, where it'd be like Monster of the Week.
Yeah,
you know.
Interesting.
Although they spend a whole lot of time. There's so many characters with so many little side stories and a lot of lore. Mm-hmm. Like it's like it takes a long time to get to the fireworks factory. You know, maybe they could like actually they could have done a little bit more like client, like interfacing with clients of Ghostbusters, like instead of them just actually like going on random Ghostbusters hunts, they can actually say, hey, you know, we got a call, here's the situation, you know, we need you to do something about it, kind of thing. Could have been more of that, but again, it was a very busy movie. But all my Ghostbusters friends were there, you know, Janine Melnitz, Annie Potts,
she was great. I think this the most talking Annie Potts has probably done in any Ghostbusters was this one.
She could have, she had a big part too.
Yeah. She was great. Loved, you know, the mayor, like all the people, like, you know, all the other ones. I want to spoil some of the other like surprise, like, you know, people cameos. Popped in. But yeah, that last Marvel movie where there was that team. There's 10 people in that fight team. And then there's that one scene where there's like, 1, 2, 3. Oh, yeah. This is their Eternals. You know what I mean? There was 10 people.
But at least we knew who these fucking people were. Like, that was a saving grace. At least we had some background on, that's Peter Venkman. I know him.
I did not go to the box office and ask for any of my money back.
I'll be right back. I want to show you what I got from the box
office.
There we go. So sadly, I was going to, you know, if I wasn't so sick, I probably would have gone to see Godzilla versus Kong, even though it's kind of been, I guess it's not so great. But, you know, since I did go see Minus One, I thought I'd just go see the Godzilla.
Oh, I'm definitely seeing that in the big screen. 100% I'm going to go see Godzilla versus Kong.
Yeah, I heard it was a fun romp. You know, this is what I got for, you know, my hard-earned money.
Okay. Wait. He's going to turn off his background. He's disappearing into the. I know what it is. It's the trap. Was that a popcorn dispenser?
Yes, it's a popcorn holder.
Yeah.
And it actually does light up. It rolls. Wow. The little trap doors. Although the trap doors are not striped accordingly, they need to be. There's actually two competing ghost traps. This is from AMC, and I think Regal Cinemas had their own version of the ghost trap. So they both have pros and cons. I'm not going out to, you know, Marlboro to, or am I to driving, you know, an hour and a half to.
I'll drive.
Yeah. Our go-to theater is a Regal, so I wonder if they have it.
Yeah, they're probably sold out.
Yeah, no.
I'm surprised they still had these because a lot of these nerdy Ghostbusters people like myself have like replica proton packs and cosplay and stuff. So like collectors and cosplayers have been buying up these.
Yeah. Because they had that was not available, and we saw it opening weekend. It was already out at our theater, which was kind of a bummer. The other big thing that I've been watching is Doctor Who, the 2005 through 2018 iteration.
Now,
13
still going.
What comes up on the HBO Max is 13 seasons, and David Tennant. you know, shows up at the end of season one. I thought, anyways, it's been great. Joe recommended it. You know, the other big thing that's happened in our world, Biff, is a few weeks ago, I take my two boys to the Tower Records, which, as we now find out, is the hot topic for kids with two parents. A comedian made that joke like last night. I think Crawford says that, but anyways. And my little guy wants to buy this book because the oldest one had already watched Jujutsu Kaisen.
And
he's been trying to get his little brother into it. So finally the little guy, you know, buys this book, and I'm a little torn because I'm like, we can get that at the library. It's $20. Plus, I want to buy these two Batman graphic novels. So when you add it all up, so we did. So I'm like happy. So he gets it, and then he reads it in like 2 hours. Then, you know, he's like, we got to go back to Tower Records.
See, there's a Tower Records?
No, I'm sorry. A Newbery Comics. Yeah, it's Newbery. And then so.
And you want to make it so they last longer? Buy him the Japanese version of the comics.
we've been dying for them to get into reading, and if this is the entry point, great. Yeah. But we can't have this expensive of a hobby. And management says, call your aunt, because my sister is a librarian, and I don't know if it works this way everywhere else, but she is in North Reading, Massachusetts, and her library is in a 28 library. Like a sell
consortium.
Right, thank you. And so I called her 2 days later. We drive on over, and she had curated like 18 of those books for him, which he powered through. And then, you know, and I was joking with him because season two's out, but the books are just coming out, but he doesn't want to watch the show until he reads the books. I'm like, oh, you're going to be like your mother. It's like, hey, you know, and he had never heard the joke. You know how you can tell if somebody read the book before they saw the movie?
They'll tell you.
And so he's
also applies for vegetarians.
And really, you know, I am
or
one
people
of
who recently stopped smoking.
Right.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
But seriously. And then there's another one, Biff, you might've heard of this, Chainsaw Man.
I don't know that one. Yeah.
This guy's face becomes a chainsaw, like some kind of. And so it's been really nice that my two boys have been watching these shows relentlessly because, you know, kind of like your Demon Slayer or Dragon Slayer, rather.
No, Demon Slayer.
Isn't there like 13,000, you know, episodes of that show?
That's like One Piece.
No, that's One Piece is the one that's been going forever. Yeah, Demon Slayer is only like, you know, four seasons.
So he's just a ferocious, you know, reader. Yeah, and it's also really interesting because the cultural aspect, and I know it's a tiny little thing, but reading right to left type thing, I think it's like just a cool thing as, you know, to kind of see, you know, that kind of become part of his world. And it's great, though. Like, Joe has been preaching the virtues of the library for quite some time because he's been getting games there and stuff. We've been going there for his tutor.
You know, I used to borrow albums.
Yeah.
Yeah. You still can go in there and get CDs and DVDs. Yeah. And
oh, my God, they're great.
Yeah.
And books.
And again, he wants to get – and it comes up in the computer that, like, Chainsaw Man number one is there. He can't find it. And I have a couple friends who are librarians, the people at my sister's libraries, all of them sweethearts. These people like just start hunting for it because it's not where it's supposed to be. And then the guy's like, well, I'm just going to have to order you another one. And this is on Tuesday. He goes, it says it should be here by Thursday and I can order. And they had like 3, 4, 7, 8, 12. He goes, oh, I'll get the other ones for you. So when we go in there Thursday, he walks and he asks, goes, how many can I take out at once? And the lady was like, how many do you feel you can be responsible for? He's like, is 10 okay? There will be 10 books for you on Thursday.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, I mean, I think Amazon is actively lobbying for these closures of libraries around the country. You know, like, because honestly, the library, if there are people aren't hogging, you know, these pieces of work that you know these highly popular ones, then you can really take advantage of like a lot of offerings from these library networks, because that's the thing. It's like, yeah, like you said, like if one library doesn't have it, another library in the network will not only like, you know, get it, you can get it at that library, they will ship it to your nearest library in partnership, you know. And you can look on, if you have a library card, you can go on their website and use the search engine. Basically, that's their online catalog. You can just do the search from home. You don't have to ring up the local librarian. But in your case, it's a relative. You know, it's like not the worst thing in the world.
I know a guy who's my sister. Do we have a parenting tip, gentlemen? It's been a while.
Teach your kids how to do their own freaking taxes so that you don't have to.
Yes. Does your kid have complicated taxes this year? How many W-2s did he have?
His taxes are going to be easy. But, I mean, just the idea that, you know what, you know, you're responsible for this. April 15th is the date, you know, just – and then, you know, and, you know, because they're adults, right? They're supposed to be adults. They should be doing it themselves. So
what
so
he's been doing taxes? It since last year. Oh, good. Yeah. Good.
Yeah.
What do you got, Joseph?
Get Biff to do your taxes for you. No, parenting tip. I would say make sure that your kids like what you like. That way, when a sequel to a popular movie franchise comes out, you're not dragging them to go see it with you. They want to go see it because they're indoctrinated. Don't do so much with a religion. You know, don't indoctrinate your kids in religion. Give them freedom of choice. But when it comes to pop culture IPs, definitely indoctrinate them early.
That's a great one.
Yeah. Get them young. Because these kids today, they won't know about Back to the Future or Ghostbusters if you don't get them started.
My son and I went to see Godzilla Minus One together because he was all for it, obviously. So.
Look at you guys bringing the main course to the table. So here's my, and I don't want to say it's a little dark one, but it's a cautionary tale.
Are we going to go back to that Nickelodeon documentary?
No. I love that, you know, that my littlest guy, like, you know, cares so much about his friends he wants his best friend over all the time. But Easter morning, he woke up to a tough life lesson. So management and coordination with the Easter Bunny, you know, makes baskets for the boys and me. It's a nice thing. And this year, I wanted his pal to stay over on Saturday night so he can go to my mom's on Sunday for Easter. My mom does a big Easter egg hunt. She hides money in the eggs, puts them around the yards. All the grandchildren are there. It's fun. It's a thing. It's great. But he wanted his friend to stay over last night. But the problem is, this morning he woke up and he was a little taken back, because usually in his Easter basket, along with the goodies and this and that, the other thing, some little chockies, is like something like a Lego set, like, you know, one of those $50-ish Lego sets, and was, you know, where's my money, bitch, type this morning, because there wasn't a Lego set to which management had to explain, well, the Easter Bunny didn't have two. And because you chose your friend to come over, you know, the Easter Bunny felt bad that there wasn't another set. So you, while we applaud, you know, look, you know, being charitable, you know, when they say give till it hurts, he's hurting a little bit right now.
So that's another parenting lesson for me, which is that, you know, don't get sucked into some commercial stuff, especially if it's religion tied and you don't even go to church. Because I have never done Easter baskets ever, and my child has never asked for anything on Easter. So that's my parental lesson.
Yeah, we've been doing Scientology candy for a couple of years now, and
that's different though. I mean,
your CNews are off the chart.
Yes, you know, it's really expensive. I mean, you got to tithe 10% of your income to buy this, and the candy's just not worth it. You know, I mean, it's peanut brittle basically. It's not even candy.
Well, he's like a little taken back, but he's fine. He's fine because, you know, the windfall at his grandmother's house will be ridiculous. Also, my boys many, many, many years ago caught wind to the fact that we will go to CVS the next couple days.
Oh yeah, for the sales.
And you know, and not just the sales of the sell checkout aisle, but they actually mark things down, you know, quite and it's a balancing act, because with Halloween and stuff, if you go in tomorrow and the day after, it's like it's 25% off.
Yeah.
And you call them sales. I call them unarmed robberies. You know, they were just, hey, you're just.
But that's my thing. And so, Biff, it is great to have you back. You've been missed sorely. You know, so welcome back to the land of the living, Joe.
Thank you.
You know, thank you for all your help. This Boston Comedy Festival. I have not worked 10 hours a day, 6 days a week for quite some time. But having you there for a good percentage of the time and sharing things like the Michael Gross moment. Yeah. If I met Michael Gross by myself, it would have been great. But, dude, it's about 1,000 times better. Oh, Biff, I didn't want to tell you this, but I will tell you this. I didn't go over and bother him, but Ryan Leach.
Brian Leach.
Brian Leach was was at the event on Tuesday, because he's a friend of Tony V's.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. But anyways, Joe, seriously, thank you for your help all this week. You're the best, Biff. It is great to see you back up and walking. You are the best. And I'm going to shut up.
Hi.
All right. I guess this is where Billy Talks a Lot comes in and wraps things up. Well, I got to do the heavy lifting around here. All right. Well, I'm, you know, I'm tired. I'm tired of talking. You know, I talk a lot on my podcast. And I'm not doing it for you assholes. I'm not. No, I'm not going to be your fucking dancing monkey. You know, I made a little name for myself in this business. I deserve some respect. And you're not going to be able to, you know, push this freckle-faced red head. I wish I had the hair. Oh, my God. Oh, Bill, what happened to your hair? But it's okay. I got a lovely wife. I got two beautiful kids. I got this great house. I got a lot of things going for me, and you know what? I got the respect of my peers, and that's what really matters. So I'm not gonna get all sentimental mushy on you. What happened? You know what it is? It's this fucking. I'm not drinking. I'm not smoking anything. I'm trying to get old Billy six packs. Trying to get back in shape here. You know, for the ladies. Not so much the ladies. What are you talking about, Bill? Oh, you're gonna cheat on your wife? No, no, sir. No. Oh, no, Nia. Oh, look who's here, the lovely Nia. Say hi, Nia. Hey, say hello. Oh, you don't want to talk. All right, get out of here, you bitch. Anyway, oh, she left the room. She didn't hear it. She doesn't listen to the podcast either. So, oh, I would know. You know what? Edit that part out. Anthony, my editor, just edit that part out of me calling Nia a bitch. That's stupid. That was... Oh, Bill, you're going to go. You put your foot in it this time. Oh, shit. Ah, jeez. What'd you do there? Oh, anyways. Go see the great Tony V. And at the he's playing with the Arlington. What is it? What is it, like a record store or something? Like, where is he? Like, is it at a Cumberland Farms? What is he doing for the venue over there? He's opening up. No, it's a some function hall. Anyways, he's a good man. He's good people. That's why I had him open for me at Fenway Park. It was a great night. One of the most memorable nights of my life. I'll never forget it. I owe a lot of my career to Tony V. He's a good man. You know what? Be careful of these two on this fucking Carnival Personnel podcast. Not so much Biff. You know, Biff, he knows he's one of the good ones. He stays away. He, you know, he's out on the West Coast. He's a West Coast elite. He doesn't, you know, mix with the riffraff in the East Coast. But these two, Jacques and Joe, whatever. And everybody gets a podcast. You know, I've been doing podcasts for 10 fucking, you know, like 15 years. I think before the iPod came out, I started podcasting. And, you know, everybody else is like, oh, I can do that shit. No, you can't. No. No, you can't. You just because you have a microphone and a fucking internet connection doesn't make you a podcaster. You know, right? You just you need talent. You need something to say. You need to have a point of view. You can't just be rambling in front of a fucking microphone to nobody, which is what I'm doing right now. What the fuck? Oh shit! But at least I got sponsors. Anyways, that's the podcast. Listen to the music and go fuck yourselves, you cunts. And don't forget.
Come in, sweet, sweet fun. Nothing but quiet. Soft, soft tones, spoken nods, misguided, misinformed. Without your charm.